Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to a special edition of Real Talks. I'm your host, David Steele. Sorry about no show yesterday, but we got one today, and we got a lot of stuff to go through. This is more of like a weekly roundup, you know, show type, whatever you want to call it. So we're here, and that's the important thing. I hope everybody's having a fantastic weekend. Got a lot of stuff on tap. Today, this is the show that I said we're going to do. At 3 o'clock Eastern time, 3 o'clock Pacific time, 6 o'clock Eastern, we are going to be doing the spoiler cast of Guardians of the Galaxy 3. So come on back for that. If you haven't watched it, saw it on Thursday, guys, it's good. That's all I'm going to say. And we have a couple stories about that a little later on. And that being said, so we're going to talk about a little bit about Guardians right now. No spoilers. And how it's going to do and everything else. And then I got a couple other stories. And then, as I said, come back for the spoiler cast at 3 p.m. And then The Untouchables last night. So that is for the Patreon down there. If you guys would like to help me out there, that's for Mom Mondays. There's two levels, one $5, one $10. I'll talk more about that at the end of the show. Okay, so let's just dive right in. So there's been a movie out now for 5 weeks, and this movie is just an absolute juggernaut. There's no other word to say it, okay? I'm talking about Super Mario. This movie just keeps, it's just like an Energizer battery. It keeps going and going and going and going. So it hit another milestone yesterday, or this week. And it is $500 million domestic. Now, I want you to think about a couple of things, okay? Because in the grand scheme of things, when we talk about all-time earning films, okay, we always talk about worldwide, which is part of it too. But for this, it's one of those things that, you know, I gotta say, it's an amazing feat because when you look at what's been out and how things have been going recently, I mean, it had the top 30 all-time opening. And that was with Friday and Saturday. And so, Wednesday, Thursday, basically what ended up happening was this movie made a lot of money. I'm just trying to find the numbers here for you guys. Sorry. But it's gone through. And it's right at that level. So as it stands right now, today, as I'm doing this this show with you today, it is number 19 all time at $503 million. Okay. Now I'm going to give you a couple of movies, probably like five or six movies that are behind it. This is domestic, guys. This is in the United States and Canada. Okay. Finding Dory. Okay. Frozen 2. Star Wars Episode One: The Phantom Menace, Star Wars: A New Hope. Now, mind you, this is adjusted for inflation. Okay, Black Panther: Wakanda Forever, The Dark Knight Rises, E.T., Captain Marvel, which made $426 million. Catching Fire. This movie's made a lot of money, and it continues to grow. So this is the article from THR. The Super Mario Brothers movie is jumping the $500 million mark at North American box office and yet another milestone for the blockbuster. From Illumination and Universal, the movie adaptation of the Nintendo video game is only the fourth movie to cross a half a billion mark domestically in the pandemic era behind Spider-Man No Way Home, which made $814 million, Top Gun Maverick, which made $718 million, and Avatar The Way of Water, $683 million. And it's the first Illumination Universal Animation title to jump $500 million domestic, not adjusted for inflation. It is also the second highest animated grossing film of all time domestically, and is the third biggest Universal release behind only Jurassic World and E.T. the Extraterrestrial. Super Mario Brothers, which finished Thursday with $499.5 million, in domestic ticket sales, has smashed numerous records since its debut in mid-March. Now, I just read you the updated numbers, by the way, including the first title of 2023 to clear $1 billion at the global box office, and it is only the 10th animated film to achieve the $1 billion milestone. The animated comedic adventure follows Brooklyn plumbers and brothers Mario, Chris Pratt, and Luigi, Charles Day, as they are transported to the magical Mushroom Kingdom world and separated. Super Mario's voice cast also includes Keegan Michael Key, Anna Taylor-Joy, Jack Black, Seth Rogen, Kevin Michael Richardson, and others, who have voiced the characters of Mario and Luigi in the Super Mario games for more than three decades, which makes a special voice appearance. The film is directed by Aaron Horsworth and Michael Jepson from a screenplay from Matthew Fogel. It was co-financed from the Universal parent company of Illumination and Nintendo. Let's talk about this for a minute, because this is big, okay? When we talk about films that are, you know, big, okay? I mean, we always talk about, it's hard to get to $1 billion. That seems to be the benchmark nowadays, if you can get to $1 billion. So this has already crossed the $1 billion mark. Well, you know, weeks ago. Now we're at $500,000 domestic. Now, I want you to put something in perspective real quick, okay? There was a little movie a couple years ago called Black Panther, okay? That made $700 million domestic. Now, it's not going to get that, okay? But I just want you to put it in perspective for a minute. That made $700 million, okay, domestic. Now, that went on, obviously, to earn over $1 billion. But my point is this. This is amazing. This is, as I said, 19th all time. Okay, it's probably going to pass titles. So it's right behind, as it stands, the remake of Beauty and the Beast, the live action one from 2017. Up next, okay, it has Beauty and the Beast, which is only $1 million behind it, which is probably going to pass. Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker at 515. And it'll take some time, but I don't know. It might get to Rogue One, which is 533. If it gets there. Now, we got a story a little later on to tell you how much it made and everything else. But even if it doesn't, crack the top 15, that's still a remarkable feat, right? They have to be so over the moon at Universal Illumination right now. It is unbelievable. I can't even imagine what they have lined up, because it's one of those things where the thing is, they can't do anything about it. They can't do anything about it because of the writer's strike, okay, in any capacity. So this is, it's a great thing, but it's also a really bad thing, because nobody can go to work until this strike is resolved. That all being said, this is still incredible. I think that, you know, no matter how much more this makes, this was a remarkable film. And I really, and to be absolutely honest with you, okay, I wonder, okay, personally speaking, if it didn't have the Wednesday and Thursday to propel it, okay, I wonder if it actually would have made this much money. Now, if it didn't, I mean, look, let's say it's $800 million. I mean, if you take those 2 days out, okay, it's about $100 million, $120-some-odd million. It's still a top 30 all-time weekend opening. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, I mean, all the money that this movie makes is going to be huge. This thing just keeps trucking along. As I said, they've got to be over the moon there in Universal. And to think it's the third highest Universal title behind Jurassic World. What was the other film I made mention of? It was, you know, but it's just an E.T. That's incredible. I mean, E.T.'s been, we're talking 1982 for E.T. So I told you something. Anyways, what do you guys think about this? Have you guys seen Super Mario Brothers? How many times have you seen Super Mario Brothers? Who's your favorite brother? Is it Mario? Is it Luigi? Are you going to get it when it comes to streaming? Let me know your thoughts down in the comments and I'll get back to everybody. Okay, so we go from, as I just made mention, to something great to something not so great. And I'm not, you know, a pessimist, and I'm not one of those people that is going to just harp on this and bang the drum every single day of this event. But the writer's strike is real. Let's call it what it is. And I said a while ago, what was going to happen is either this was going to get fixed at the 11th hour, or this was going to go on for a long time. And so they have gone on strike, and this was really the first week of it. And now, okay, we're finding out, believe it or not, that there is one company out there that's forcing their employees to work, and that's Disney. Disney is now basically telling their showrunners and producers they have to work during this writer's strike. And part of me is, you know, like, what are they thinking? But also the other part of me is like, okay, I understand it. It's a business thing. So here's the article from THR. And I want to read this to you guys because, and I'm not going to read the Q&A at the bottom. I'll leave the link at the bottom and the page for you guys because I want you to read the Q&A. I think, and maybe it's just me, but I think I found a loophole. But nonetheless, so this, as I said, comes from the THR. Studios demanding showrunners work during writer's strike. Disney and Warner Brothers Discovery this week sent out a letter to showrunners employed by the company's various studios, reminding striking employees, writer-producers, that they are still expected to perform their contractual obligated non-writing services. The letter from the legal department, ABC Signature, owned by Disney, reads this. We want specifically to reiterate to you as a showrunner or other writer-producer that you are not excused from performing your duties as a showrunner and or slash producer on your series as a result of the WGA strike. Your personal service agreement with the studio requires that you perform your actions with the showrunner and or producing duties, even with the WGA, even if the WGA attempts to fine you or for performing such services during the strike, wrote Bob McPhail, the assistant chief counsel for Disney, owned ABC Signature, in a letter sent to showrunners and obtained by the THR. Your duties as a showrunner and or slash producer are not excused, suspended, or terminated until and unless you are so notified in writing by the studio. The letter is dated May 3rd, which is the second day of the WGA's strike against members of the Alliance of Motion Pictures and Television Producers, which represents studios and streamers. Writers have hit the picket lines in Los Angeles and New York this week as they seek increased wages, viewership transparency from streamers, and protections against mini rooms and the use of artificial intelligence. A similar letter sent by Max, formerly HBO Max, on May 2nd, said to WGA members who also serve in producer capacities, quote, HBO Max, respects your membership in the WGA and will not do anything to place you in jeopardy of violating WGA rules. However, we believe certain services such as participating in the casting process and or contributing to non-writing production and post-production work are clear examples of non-WGA required services that should continue to be rendered during this time, end quote. The memo also added, the WGA cannot permit you from rendering producing services pursuant to your personal services agreement as long as you are providing non-writing services. The letter, the Disney letter, read it below, features a Q&A, and I'm not going to do that. You guys can read that if you want. I'll put the link in the description. Informing showrunners that they are, quote, required, end quote, to perform duties that are not in line with the guidance provided by the WGA and to its 11,500 striking members. The memo specifically states in the showrunners and or producers role, quote, you may, along with other non-writing services, be required to perform services commonly referred to as A through H services as producer, such as cutting for time, small changes to dialogue or narration before and during production, and quote, changes in technical or stage direction, end quote. These are duties that, according to the WGA's contract, non-writers can perform on covered projects. However, the WGA's strike rules explicitly prohibit union members from performing these activities during the 2023 work stoppage. The rules prohibit hyphenates members who are employed in dual capacities from performing any services, including A through H functions, the rules state, which puts the showrunners and the writers in a difficult position, caught in between the dictates of their employees and the union. A lot of it sounds wrong. A through H, a lot of it sounds wrong. A through H duties are specifically outlined by the Guild as things you cannot do, said one longtime showrunner of the Disney memo. This person did not receive that memo as they did not have a deal with Disney. But legally, I'm sure that there's a lot of tussling over this. Long story short, this doc is fooling no writer. It's just odd because it's written almost as they were trying to organize a company that was already unionized, like we were already in the union. In a statement to THR on Friday, the WGA noted that, quote, A through H services, end quote, are specifically, quote, specified defined in the Guild writing as services, end quote, and that they are, quote, struck work that Guild members are prohibited from doing a work stoppage. The Guild added, it is shameful that Disney, which has grown its business on unionized labor, is resorting to this familiar union-busting tactic. A Max letter is specifying that the company believes, quote, certain services, end quote, during casting, production, and post are non-WGA services, also potentially opening showrunners up to being caught between their Guild-mandated ban on A through H functions and the company's expectations. The Max further letter argues that showrunners should come to work despite the Guild's insistence that, quote, no member should cross a WGA picket line or enter the premises of a struck company for any purpose, end quote. The Max communication calls this dictate misleading, end quote, as the WGA cannot discipline writer-producers from performing non-writing services only. HBO Max expects you to continue to come to work to perform non-writing duties under your contract during a WGA strike unless and until those services are formally suspended or terminated, it states. Okay, let's talk about this because this is important, okay? You have people right now, okay, that are caught in between a rock and a hard place, okay? And that rock and a hard place is somewhere called Disney. They want them to come to work, okay? And they want them to work and perform these services as known as A through H. On the other hand, the DGA basically says you can't do this because they're in the union. And I think that it's incredibly, look, at the end of the day, push comes to shove, okay? I think Disney needs to just pay, and all these studios, okay, just need to pay the writers. It needs to be a fair legal agreement. The problem is that you have two people, okay? You have the immovable object against the unstoppable force here because the writers are the ones that go. They are the ones that make the content, okay? And then on this side, you have the studios that want to make as much money as they can, and they're just butting heads. Now, this is what happens, and you have a strike. The last time that you had a strike like this, you got, you know, this is how reality, people forget, this is how reality television started. Way back in the day when there was a writer's strike. Because nobody, they finally agreed after a 6-month period of time. But all these shows, they started coming on. We still have Survivor 25 years later. Okay? I'm not saying that it's a bad thing. I'm just saying that, you know, people going, people that are on strike, are going to be ready to go back to work very soon. The strike is not going to last that long. I tend to disagree with you, Kevin. I tend to disagree with you because the thing is, the studio does not want to give up they don't want to give up any power, okay? And it's not just studios. You have to understand something, too. It's not just studios, okay? It's streamers, too. And I think that when you have these companies that are making billions and billions and billions of dollars, okay, but you're paying peanuts to these people over here and they can't even make a living, especially in the last 5-6 years since the pandemic, okay? Inflation has killed everybody. It doesn't matter where you are in the United States. It has killed everybody, okay? It was as high as 9.5% at one point, okay? I know in Los Angeles, you know, I don't live in Los Angeles, but you're paying $5 for a gallon of gas right now, okay? Because inflation is killing everybody. And until inflation drops, and you know, it's true in anything. Whether it's groceries, you're spending more for groceries now. You know, whether it's gas, you're running them, whether it's your your mortgage. You know, I mean, even though that's a little different, but all these other things are going up. There's a difference between a living wage and minimum wage. Okay. A living wage is something that you can live off of. Okay. And you can put a little money away. God forbid there's an emergency. Okay. Minimum wage, okay, is something that, because you got to remember, a lot of these people are entry. I mean, yes, there are experienced writers and everything else, but some of these people are entry-level writers. So they're getting the bottom of the bucket, okay? And they're paying union dues, okay? So don't forget that, too. Because there's, you know, when something like this happens, you got to have, you know, you have to go on strike. The point is this, okay? When you have a company telling you to go to work, okay, and then you have your union over here, that who do you be loyal to? Do you be loyal to your company or do you be loyal to your union? Now, it's interesting because here in the Q&A, in the letter, okay, I'm going to read something real quick to you guys because it's fascinating, okay? It says here, okay, that, and I have to find it, bear with me. It says here that they will cover Disney, so ABC Signature or Disney, okay, will cover the cost of their fines. Okay, should a studio, where is it? Basically what it's saying is this, okay, that if there are any fines, the studio will cover them, okay? That being said, okay, here's a question here. Can WGA members resign their membership to afford paying? Okay, so if you are a member of the WGA, this is the answer to the question. If you are a member of the WGA and attend, okay, that's if you resign your membership. The point is this. It said that the company will basically turn around and pay your fines. And I don't believe that, okay? Because that's going to cost the company quite a bit of money, okay? Because the longer that they are on strike for, the more they're going to be paying in fines. And I just don't see how they're going to be able to do that. Look, they make billions of dollars. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that it's one of those things where this is going to go on. People don't believe me. It's going to go on a long, long time. And Marvel just got hit by this the other day because their writers, okay, just so the movie Blade, okay, that was supposed to, it's going to be coming out in a couple of years with Michelle, with the movie Blade, okay, those writers just went on strike. So it's going to be fascinating to see. I mean, we just had a fantastic opening with Guardians of the Galaxy, and we'll get to that in a couple minutes. But it's one of those things where you go, how long is this really going to last? And I think that, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think that it's going to last quite a long time, and people need to buckle in for the long run. So, anyways, what do you guys think about Disney making their showrunners and producers work during the strike? Do you think they're right in having them do the A through H stuff? Or do you think the guild is right in basically telling them, you need to come with us? What would you do in this kind of scenario? Let me know your thoughts down in the comments and I'll get back to everybody. Okay, so as we all know, 48 hours ago, there was a little movie that came out and it kicked off not only the blockbuster season, it kicked off blockbuster season. And I'm talking about Guardians of the Galaxy 3. This movie is going to be huge. And it is huge. And I have a couple of stories here I want to talk to you guys about because it's really fascinating to see some of this stuff. I saw it Thursday. We're going to be doing the spoiler cast later on today. I can't wait. I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoy this. Now, people are going to say, well, you know, it's one of the, you know, I think what you can only do with these kind of films is compare apples to apples. So you can't compare this to another Ant-Man movie or an Iron Man movie or a Captain America movie. You have to compare it to Guardians of the Galaxy movies, right? And I got to say, this one was amazing. So it's fascinating because when we talk all about numbers, that, so this did, let me just read the article and then I'll talk to another one, because they have, excuse me, they have a projection for what it might be making too for the weekend. So Guardians of the Galaxy rockets to a 48 million opening day. Guardians of the Galaxy kicked off the summer blockbuster on Friday. Bear with me. Sorry, guys. Okay, kicked off the road. While Disney's domestic numbers have yet to come in, analysts indicate that it drew about $48 million on its opening day. Bear with me real quick. I just want to get one more thing ready for you guys. Sorry about that. Okay, we'll come back to it. So, okay. So here is the full story. Sorry about that, guys. Guardians of the Galaxy formally kicked off the summer blockbuster season on Friday with $48.2 million in its opening day. Now, that includes $17.5 million on Thursday. The trilogy capital is on track to land within the expected weekend, which is pegged the Disney release to take root of about $110 to $120 million debuting through Thursday. That would be enough to notch the second highest opening of the year, only behind Super Mario at 146, coined over a three-day period. However, it would roughly be a quarter down from $146.5 million earned by Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 back in 2017. The James Gunn directed Extraterrestrial has garnered favorable nods with a 67% approval rate from top critics on review aggregate Rotten Tomatoes. Variety chief film critic Peter Duberge was extremely favorable, naming a film critic pick. Gunn toys with the morality of his ensemble as well, but he does so responsibly, honoring the bonds that we've made with these characters over the years and recognizing that the Guardians will eventually evolve, he wrote. But even now, encouraging the Marvel Studios is a sterling response of the first round of ticket buyers, as indicated from the film's A grade through research firm CinemaScore. The strong result matches Black Panther: Wakanda Forever and is a leg up of the B-level grades earned by the recent Ant-Man and the Wasp and Doctor Strange: Multiverse of Madness. Some disappointing murmurs have steadily grown among Marvel audiences in the years since the 2019 Raptors received a superbly commercial team-up Avengers Endgame, but Guardians 3 seems to have the favor of the fans. Guardians of the Galaxy 3 bids farewell to Chris Pratt's Star-Lord and his crew of interstellar heroes played by Zoe Saldana, Dave Bautista, Plemkifa, and Karen Gillian, as well as the voices of Vin Diesel and Bradley Cooper. The new name gives insight to Rocket Raccoon's tragic past as the team faces off against a high evolutionary. It's certainly a good week to be Chris Pratt, though, as audiences continue to see his flock and turn into the Super Mario Brothers movie. After 4 weekends at the domestic box office, Universal, Nintendo, and Illumination Animated Adventure is finally falling to second place this weekend, projecting to an $18.5 million gross through the weekend. That's down about 55% from the previous outing. Mario Brothers has not faced a week-to-week drop higher than 37% so far. That shows how Guardians 3 is taking a bite out of ticket sales for the video game adaptation, but also demonstrates the impressive staying power that Mario has sustained through a month in the theaters. Total domestic gross should stand at about $518 million through Sunday, far and away the highest of the year so far. Speaking of, Evil Dead Rise looks to take third at about $1.6 million. The Warner Brothers release has now crossed $50 million, matching that $19 million production budget. The wacky horror entry was originally commissioned for an HBO Max release. Are You There, God, It's Me, Margaret is in fourth place, projecting $3.2 million in its second weekend. That's a modest holding of 51%, even though its $10 million domestic gross is little hope of matching its $30 million production budget. And so you had John Wick that came in at the fifth slot and Love Again at the fourth. Okay, let's talk about this. It's good and bad. I'm going to say it's good because it's really, you know, it's a good take home. Okay. What I have always said is this, okay. It is not the first week. So yeah, so you have to understand something too. The last five titles prior to this, okay, actually ended up making about $156 million when it comes to opening weekends. Average. Doctor Strange was at 187 at the high point. Ant-Man and the Wasp was at the low point, 107, I think. It's not about the first weekends, okay? It's all about the second weekends. Now, the fact is that this is a good movie. Is it the first Guardians? No, because it's hard to duplicate that success, but it's still not bad. Now, when you get about $110 or $120 million, it's not bad. It's not bad, okay? And it was different. Different in the respect that it was completely isolated from everything else. And that's a problem that Marvel is having now, okay? You know, and we talked about it. We've talked about it before, is that a lot of these films coming out are either sequels or standalone films, okay? I mean, you take a look at Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. You take a look at Doctor Strange, Multiverse of Madness. You take a look at Ant-Man, Quantumania. There's no actual vision of where they're going. And that's a problem. And, you know, having Kang in there for that particular film, because in Phase 4, there was nothing. We heard nothing, okay? I mean, yes, we had hits like Spider-Man No Way Home and a couple others, but there was no big bad law. And so they had, I won't say shoehorned it, they had shoehorned him in the first thing. Even the end credits scenes. By the way, guys, like I said, stay tuned for later on today when we do the spoiler cast. Come back and, you know, join us for that. I think that this is a good movie. This is a very good movie. And I think that all of that being said, I'm going to go see it again probably. But yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it. It's one of the better entries into the MCU that we've had in the last couple of years, for sure. I liked it. And, you know, it's going to be fascinating to see what the box office drop is from this week to next week. Because it's, and I've said it before, okay? This is, it. Look, at the end of the day, there are three films, okay? I've said this before. There are three films, okay, that are going to win two weekends. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 was one of them, okay? The Flash was the other one, and Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning Part 1 was going to be the other one. That being said, I'm really curious to see what the drop-off is going to be between this weekend to next weekend, because Fast 10 is going to win in a couple of weeks. So, but once again, it's not all about money. You know, Disney's going to make their money overseas with this. I liked it. You know, it was good. I got to be honest. I teared up a couple of times. I won't say I cried, but I got a little emotional because we're seeing not only the finale of it, but we're seeing the journey and not only the journey, but the origin of one of the characters there. So if you guys haven't seen this already, go see it, come back. I'm going to do the spoiler cast later on today with Matthew, and that's going to be a blast. And I think that's going to be a lot of fun. Anyways, guys, what do you guys think about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3? Have you seen it yet? If so, how many times have you seen it? Have you gone to see it, you know, a couple times during the weekend? Let me know your thoughts down in the comments. Okay, so one of the big things with these films, especially Guardians, because it is heavy, heavy, heavy on visual effects, is it's one of those things that it's a heavy visual effects film. There's no doubt about that. And one of the things that is fascinating to see and hear about is behind the scenes stuff. So this comes from the Hollywood Reporter as well, but this is behind the scenes and how this was done. And it really got interesting because that's where the story behind the stories is where it's at for me. But so this comes from the Hollywood Reporter, and this talks about how one of the supervisors got emotional on the final day of set, and there were 3,066 visual effects shots to be done. So, as Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy opens in theaters, visual effects supervisor Stephanie Shireta remembers the, quote, very emotional, end quote, final day of shooting with the cast, crew, and director James Gunn. We were all finishing the last few scenes and saying goodbye to everybody. We were all crying like babies in the last day, he says in the new episode, The Hollywood Reporter's BTS podcast. We were having so much fun shooting it, and we're having so much fun and all the sadness at the end. It was late post that Gunn was named co-chair and co-CEO of DC's films. But Serretta said the director never missed a beat on Guardians. That's his baby. He's been wanting to do this movie for a while, and it's so important for him. We had full access to him, said longtime Marvel collaborator Serretta. A two-time Oscar nominee for Guardians of the Galaxy and Doctor Strange. With the vendors, especially with Weta, for the final battle, he was there all the time. So Weta, if you don't know, is a visual effects company, one of the biggest visual effects companies in the world, next to ILM. They're actually the ones that helped do The Rings of Power, the series for Amazon. The ambitious third movie in the franchise, which centers on Rocket's past, involved a whopping 3,066 visual effects shot spread over across roughly 10 VHS companies, including Framestore, Weta, and Crafty Apes. I always love the name of those. Meticulous character animations were critical as the evolution of Rocket, who was, quote, the heart of the movie, end quote, needs to be realistic and emotive. There's a lot of close-ups in the films. We open the movie up with an extreme close-up of the eyes of baby Rocket Raccoon. And then we transition to a grown Rocket Raccoon, which, by the way, when you see it, it's fantastic. Serretta said of the CG Rocket, one of the many CG characters in the movie, which includes one of his badass crews and new characters. It was so important we get the details correct. For instance, the wetness in the eyes, all those things, seeing all those, almost all the tear ducts. They have eyes that are really black, really dark. You don't get to see the white that much, he adds of the raccoons. Most of the time when they look around, they just turn their heads. They don't really look with their eyes as much as humans do. He remembers the VHX team studying raccoons in the creative character. And even has a picture of Gunn holding a baby critter. The visual effects supervisor discusses additional changes to the visual effects working, including a 2-minute long oneer that appears in one of the action sequences. We worked on it for almost a year in post, he said of the shot, which was complete. He was completed in Weta. All right, let's talk about this. First of all, that's amazing, okay? Because it's all about, we take for granted these things when we go to the theaters and see this stuff, but there are people behind this. And when you have these companies, I mean, you know, when I did the Avengers Infinity War pod video, okay, I actually showed you guys one of the shots, and that was just a mock drawing. And then I showed you the actual shot from the film, and it was pretty impressive. All that being said, this stuff is amazing, hearing these stories. And like I said, when you see it, it's just mesmerizing, because these are actual people creating this stuff. And to see that, hear that one shot was almost done a year in post, it's unbelievable. And this is why I think everybody really needs to get, I'm going to go full screen. This is why I think everybody needs to get paid well, because it's one of those things that they're putting their heart and their soul. I mean, I sat through all of the credits, not just to watch the post-credits scene, but to give credit to those people that worked diligently day in and day out, okay? Whether they were in craft, whether they were a camera operator, whether they were a visual effects artist, because those people, all of those people, they are the ones that make this magic happen. Yes, we always talk about producers and directors and writers, but those are the people. Without those people, you don't get what you get. You know, and especially, you know, the writers. I mean, now Gunn is established. He has written a lot. You know, he's written most or if not all of his films. But those visual effects artists, when we hear about these stories, they need to get paid. They need to get paid. And we're working in such an industry now that it's, you know, and I say we, I mean, it's they. I'm not doing the work. they were working in such an industry that they're working harder than what they're getting paid. So, but it's one of those things where when you see some of these shots like this, I mean, this is a CG thing. Okay. I mean, this is more of a puppet just laying down. Okay. But the detail to it. Okay. Or any of the action sequences. And I think that's so incredibly vital to remember. So, you know, it's always fascinating to hear about these stories, right? Because you have to remember that these people are like family. They're working on these films for 5-6 months at a time. They make lifelong friends, you know, and some of them know, you know, it's an inside kind of thing. Somebody will call, say, hey, you know, this job's coming up. They'll recommend them for this job. Next thing you know, they're on that project. They're lifelong friends. So it's really cool to see, but it's amazing to see and hear that there were 3,000 shots, visual effects shots in this, and one of them took almost a year. Anyways, guys, what do you think about this? What do you think about visual effects in general? Do you think that, you know, did you know there were that many shots in the film? Do you work on visual effects? Have you ever done a Marvel film? A lot of questions there. Do you think they should get paid fairly? Let me know your thoughts down in the comments and I'll get back to everybody. Okay, so the last story of the day, it's not a bad story, but it's an interesting story. And it's an interesting story because when you look at the streamers we have now and what they're doing, okay, you wouldn't really think about it, right? I mean, Netflix is one of those things where, and really Netflix is one of the major, I don't say culprits, but one of the users of this. And that's third-party shows. So what these streamers do is they basically, they'll take a show, and this, by the way, this is part of what they're talking about in the writer's strike. But that being said, these streamers will take these shows, and I'm just going to use one off the top of my head. We're going to say Friends, right? That has gone to the original show to that network, or to, let's say, Netflix. So what they'll do is they'll pay NBC or Peacock or whoever owns the rights, and they'll pay a certain amount of money over a certain amount of years to have Friends put on their network. Okay? So you, the consumer, know that when I go over to Netflix, bang, I'm going to be able to watch Friends anytime I want, okay? Or whatever it is. So this is an interesting little article. So this is the title of this article is Why Cable and Broadcast Shows Still Matter for Streaming. And it says, would Paramount have topped 60 million subscribers in the past quarter without shows from CBS, MTV, and other sister divisions? It's hard to know. But the streamer is far from alone, is depending on more than just streaming originals, a new analysis shows. Streaming services have long relied on a combination of original and licensed content to attract and retain subscribers. While original content helps establish a unique brand identity and drive new subscribers, licensed content serves as the backbone of these services, providing a rich and diverse library of titles that cater to a large, broad range of tastes and preferences. Major studios, networks, and production companies often once content providers for a range of players that have now launched their own streaming services. This move has resulted in the fragmentation of content distributors and has made access to popular licensed content an increasingly challengeable and an expensive endeavor for streamers. So the chart below, which I'm going to put up here in a moment, underscores the importance of non-streamer original content. So here is the chart that I want you guys to check out real quick. Okay, here's the chart. Okay, I want to put this full screen for you guys. So, which comprises the majority of the most in-demand shows, services like Peacock and Hulu boast extensive libraries of licensed content, while only one original service tops at most 25 in demand. Okay, so before I finish the article, I'm going to show you this. So let's move the thing down here real quick. Okay. So what we have here, okay, and this goes to all streaming services. So this is vitally important. So now this is Q1, which is January, February, March. Okay, the first 3 months. Okay, so you have 7 streamers here. Okay, arguably the most popular streamers. Now, Apple is not on here. Okay, so original is in red and not original is in blue. So not original is I'm buying a third-party service or a third-party show. Disney leads the way with 11 original titles. Now, that makes sense, right? I mean, they have The Mandalorian. They have, I'm probably not going to name them all. You guys can figure out which ones I don't name. But you've got The Mandalorian. You've got Andor. You've got blanking on a lot of them. But nonetheless, you know which ones are original, right? Like Andor, The Mandalorian. Those are original titles. They also have, okay, non-original titles. Okay, so because Disney is so large, they're able to put all of their content on one platform. Okay, so they'll take, I don't know, one of the things that they know, okay, and they'll put it on, for example, 30 for 30. They own ESPN, okay? They'll take their 30 for 30 stuff and they'll put it on Disney Plus, even though it's for free. Well, that's not true because that's, okay, so think of another title. Okay, that's not original. Netflix, and this is why Netflix is in trouble. Okay, now if you look at Disney, they have 11 original. Netflix only has 6 titles. Okay, they have 19 non-original titles. That means they're buying the rights of whom, whatever it is, whether it's Friends, whether it's, I don't know, Grey's Anatomy, whether it's Supernatural, whatever it is, and they're paying for the rights. And they're putting it on their platform so you guys can go watch it. When you say, okay, where can I find it? It's on Netflix. Okay. They only have 6 original titles. Okay. So something like The Queen's Gambit, you know, House of Cards, when that was on, that was original. So, and as you see, it goes down. So Paramount only has 5. Okay. So you have Hulu and Peacock. Okay. Now Hulu, to be fair, Hulu is owned by Disney. Okay, so it's kind of, this is why I think Iger wants to try and sell it, to try and, you know, A, clear up some money, but also B, he doesn't have to pay for licensing. He being Disney, doesn't have to want to pay for licensing. Peacock is it's all non-original stuff. So let me finish this story up and you'll hear the rest why. Okay, so like the one show would be for Peacock would be Poker Face and Orville. For Hulu, okay? Many of the popular titles that they call, quote, snackable or easy to consume, often lighthearted and not demanding significant emotional intellectual value from the viewer. Designed for shorter viewing sessions or multitasking, these shows have transitioned from linear television to streaming service in significant numbers, with several becoming top performers. For instance, Saturday Night Live and The Office were among the most in-demand shows in Peacock in the first quarter. While The Simpsons, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and Family Guy enjoyed the same success on Hulu. Even though Disney Plus is known for releasing numerous titles, like Star Wars and MCU projects, have more non-original shows, and it's more popular, Paramount Plus similarly capitalizes on its IP. When people think of Paramount, they usually think of Star Trek. Such as showrunner Taylor Sheridan, output in the Star Trek franchise to attract and retain its core fan base. Among the top 25 in-demand shows in Paramount Plus, 5 are originals and 4 belonging to either the Star Trek or the Sheridan IP. It's worth noting that not all non-original shows are licensed from third parties. In some cases, these shows may be owned in-house by a corporate sibling of the streaming service. So, I don't know. You understand what it means, though. They may own it, but it may be one of their sister companies. This is particularly evident with HBO Max. Even though the service is set to drop HBO from its name soon, 8 of the top 25 most in-demand shows, including hits like Game of Thrones, The Last of Us, and legacy shows like The Wire and The Sopranos, premiere on HBO. Only 4 were Max originals. A similar trend can be observed with Paramount Plus, where 12 of the 25 most in-demand shows come from networks under the same corporate umbrella, such as CBS, Nickelodeon, and Showtime. So what they're doing essentially is taking these shows from whatever it is, okay, and then putting it, slapping it on streaming. So you have to pay for it eventually. And that's when you only have one show that's original on Peacock, and that's Poker Face, or you have, you know, I don't know, four shows on HBO Max that are original, and you have 21 titles that are not original, it's problematic. It really is. You know, it's fascinating because you say, well, where is the original content? There really is none. I mean, while Disney Plus, they may boast all these subscribers, you know, I go back to Netflix for a minute, right? Netflix has 19 titles that are non-original. That's huge. They're paying so much money in licensing fees that this is why they're in debt. I'm not talking about spending hundreds of millions of dollars on original films like The Irishman, like, you know, like your Glass Onion, $90 million there, like anything else. So it's really, you know, it's fascinating because now Disney, they can just put anything they want on there, right? They own Marvel, they own Star Wars, they own National Geographic, so they can just put all their stuff on there, you know? Look at Wakanda Forever. That was the last Marvel film that went on Disney Plus. That went on February 1st. It came out in November. That turnaround was very, very quickly. Guardians of the Galaxy 3, okay? Mark my words, by the end of the summer, that's going to be on Disney Plus. Okay? That will be on Disney Plus because, hey, the turnaround's there. Anyways, I know this really isn't sexy because it's not something you talk about, but it is necessary. Because original shows are now going the way of the wayside. If streaming services are just going to slap their IPs on there for whatever it is, why do we have them? You know, why would you watch them? Because it's easy. That's why. Anyways, what do you guys think about this? Do you think that this is an interesting concept? Did you know about licensing and third-party stuff and everything like that? Do you watch licensed shows for like Friends on Netflix or, you know, one of these other things? Do you have a favorite streamer? Do you have a favorite show on a streamer that's licensed? Let me know your thoughts down in the comments and I'll get back to everybody. Okay, so that is it for today's show. But before we go, I got a couple of things. Number one, I just watched The Untouchables last night. Tomorrow, we got a big day of streaming tomorrow. Okay, I'm going to be doing 3 streams tomorrow. The first stream, I'm going to do them in any order, but the first stream is going to be the second Mission Impossible film. So it's going to be Mission Impossible 2. That is going to be the 1996 movie directed by John Woo. Of course, Tom Cruise stars in the sequel to Mission Impossible, I should say, which was released in 2000. That's going to be out. Remember, guys, we're doing a whole Mission Impossible rewatch series for you guys. It's all going to lead up to Dead Reckoning on July 12th. So we'll be watching the second one. I've already watched it. I've got the notes. We'll do the stream tomorrow. Number two, I just watched Untouchables last night. So I took my notes and I will be doing that. Now that is once that stream, unless you watch it live, okay, which come on back to, you know, I'll put times up once I know. That is going to be going up on Patreon. That is going to be the second month in order for Bob Mondays. So Metal, going nice. Nice. You're gonna enjoy it. I really, really think you're gonna enjoy it. Once you do see it, I don't know where you are, or at least come back and watch it after the fact. Come back and watch the spoiler cast. I'm curious to see what you have to think about that. But do enjoy it. So that is gonna be the second in Bob Mondays. Okay, now if you want to help me out, head on over to the Patreon. Okay, there's 2 levels. One is $5, one is $10. The $5 one is Mob Mondays, and I'm going to be dropping this once I stream this, okay? I will be dropping it next Monday on Patreon for you guys, and that will be good. If you want to do the $10 level, you'll got both rewatch Wednesdays and Mob Mondays. Rewatch Wednesdays are films that I haven't seen in a while that I'm going to sit down and watch again. You guys voted. I'm going to be watching Training Day tonight. Denzel Washington, Ethan Hawke. That's an Antoine Fuqua one. He ended up winning the Academy Award in 2001 for that. So that is there. If you want to support me another way, hit that join button. It's only a couple bucks a month. It's like a cup of coffee. It's less than a gallon of gas. You'll be helping me out, guys. Perfect Movies just dropped the other day, 48 hours ago, actually. Now, sat down with Matthew Anderson. We did The Empire Strikes Back. So that was a blast to do. Next month for June, I put a vote out on Twitter for you guys, and you know, to see what you guys wanted. And you voted. And so I'm going to, here is my Twitter address. You guys can go follow me there. I'm always talking about movies or in spaces or other things. Go do that. But you guys voted. And so the film for June will be The Dark Knight. So we will be doing The Dark Knight in June. I think I might have somebody lined up for to come do that with me. So we'll talk to him about that. But so yeah, I mean, I've seen it several times, but I'm going to be watching with a totally different lens. Don't forget, guys, we got a ton of stuff on the channel coming up. We got all these spoiler casts coming up for you guys. Today will be the Guardians of the Galaxy spoiler cast. Couple weeks, we'll be doing Fast 10, and then throughout the summer, all these spoiler casts. And yeah, I can't thank you guys enough for all the support as far as, you know, watching these videos and helping me out. If I could ask one small thing, do hit that like and subscribe button because that gets it out to everybody. Leave me your thoughts in the comments section. I always say that, but I always get back to everybody because you took the time to respond to me and I want to take the time to respond back to you. Oh, sure. Look, absolutely. So this is my Twitter handle. There you go, Metal. Wannabe Rounder. There you go. Because I wanted, you know, you guys have taken the time to actually do this. So I want to take the time and respond to you guys. We got a ton of stuff coming up this summer. We got a ton of stuff coming up next week, you know, and all that good stuff. So, like I said, come back later on today. We're going to do the Guardians of the Galaxy spoiler cast. Tomorrow is going to be three streams. We're going to do we're going to do Mission Impossible 2. We're going to do The Untouchables. And we're going to do Training Day. All in one day. So you guys are going to get a lot of stuff. And if you miss the Training Day and the Untouchables one, you can head on over to Patreon and watch them there. Okay, guys. I think that's it. So do the three things that you need to do. Be safe, be careful, and have a great rest of the weekend. Oh, yeah, and go see Guardians. All right, talk to you later, guys. I'm David Steele, and you've been watching Real Talks. Bye-bye, guys.